Welcome back to episode 177 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here in Chess Journeys, we love to explore the glories of ratings gain and winning club championships like I did. That was fun. We also dive into the plateaus and the pits of despair below that. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. I want to thank our Queen Level supporters, Tim Everett, Scott D4B6 Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Don Rich Burgess, Brandon Hallside, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich, Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Peterson, Christian Glaw, Andrew Rimmer, Travel Mocha, Mohammed Ibrahim, Vasant, Bruce Campbell, Ian Mason, and King Level supporter, Ian Samples. If you want to appear on the show, great way to do it. Fill out the Google form in the show notes. We all want to hear your story. It's one place I go to get guests. If you're interested in chess improvement, well, Noel Studer's Next Level Training Program may be for you. There's a code in the show notes. It helps you. It helps Noel. It helps me. Everybody wins. And, you know, you should be sure to check out my new YouTube series, The Road to 2200, where I struggle to reach 2200 lead chess. I play 10-5 rapid games. I think I have like 12 posted now. Not many people are watching them, so you can have the joy of being the only one watching it. So hopefully it's entertaining. And this week, we have a new sponsor for the show. I guess this is our second week with them, but we have Chessnut. They make a variety of electronic chess sets, and they were gracious enough to send me a Chessnut Pro. And I have long considered getting an electronic chess board. I struggle with this. If my goal is to improve at over-the-board chess, why do I play endless games online and then wonder why that skill doesn't translate as well to over-the-board? I only get a chance to play one a week. So my hope is that this board will let me play more OTB. And over the next few weeks, I'm going to bring you on my journey with a Chessnut Pro. If you're interested in purchasing one, check the show notes for a link that will give you a discount larger than any that they're currently offering on the website. And be sure to use the code KevinSkull. Okay, so last week I talked about how beautiful the board is. And I got to say, that has not changed. It's not like this week I was like, oh, it's not beautiful anymore. It's still awesome. It looks great sitting there. But I also had the chance to play a bunch of games. And I gotta say, I really enjoyed them. It just felt so good sitting at a board while playing my games. I will say I didn't have a lot of time, so I tried to play some quicker time controls, and that is a little more challenging. You have to make your opponents move. Then if there's a little bit of lag with the app, that time kind of ticks away really fast. So I'm really looking forward to playing more rapid games, and what I really want to do is challenge my friends to some classical games over the board. I'm hopeful that I can retain my tension if I'm playing over the board. So the bottom line is I've had a blast with it this week. I have a big tournament coming up this weekend in Las Vegas, so I thought we should grind some games over the board on my Chessnut Pro. I was able to get these games in and had a lot of fun doing it, and now I feel like maybe I'll be a little bit more prepared for my tournament in Vegas this weekend. So if you're thinking maybe a Chessnut Pro is right for me, they have a massive holiday sale going on. And again, be sure to use the code KevinSkull. All right, let's turn to our moment at hand. We've got Dave. He's recently retired and finding that he has more time to spend on chess improvement as of late. I'm very interested to see if this extra time has translated into great results. So, Dave, how are you doing, and have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, actually, I did play some chess today at a senior center. We have a couple of senior centers in the area that have afternoons where they have chess meetups, and I did that today.
That sounds fantastic. Are you in an area that is sort of dedicated to seniors, or are you just lucky enough to have senior centers around you?
No, I mean, we have several communities around here that have senior centers with a whole bunch of activities. Currently, I think there's only two of them that have a scheduled chess time, but there are quite a few of them around here.
That's cool. And at these meetups, are they only seniors that are going, or is it open to other people as well?
The one I went to today, you have to register there. So I don't know if a young person could go, but The one I usually go to on Thursday afternoons is just, you don't have to check in or anything. And You know, so probably anybody could go to that one.
Okay, that's cool. And are these pretty well attended?
You know, we get probably on Thursdays, maybe on average, maybe half dozen players. And like today we had, yeah, similar number today.
Okay, that's cool. Where are you at, if you don't mind asking? Are you in Florida? Are you in Arizona? Or are you just some nope. other place?
No, I'm in Wisconsin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's why I think I messaged because you wanted to you had originally proposed either yesterday evening or this evening.
Yeah.
And yesterday evening originally I had something scheduled and then it got canceled because of the snowstorm. So I could have done it, but at the originally I had something else going on. So
okay.
But yeah, so yeah, I'm in a suburb of Madison, Wisconsin. So it's in the south central part of the state.
Okay, that's very cool. That's one thing I don't miss about living in the Midwest. In LA, we have no snowstorms, not ever.
In the mountains, I guess in the mountains you would, but not.
Definitely in the mountains, but not down in the city.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's cool. So it sounds like you're able to, are you playing, is it like fun to play with other people around your age? You know, you're able to like have this thing in common with them?
Yeah. I mean, I do prefer to play with people at least closer to my age. And even these last two tournaments where I've done well, I have been paired against people maybe not even my age, but at least I had five players in these last two tournaments that are at least older than 50 years old. With all of them with five of them over 50 rated much higher than me, and I haven't lost any of those games. Okay. I've drawn four and won one of them, but when I play the younger players, a lot of times that's more of a challenge. I mean, they just calculate quicker and deeper and they're improving so fast. So I guess I do prefer to play people close to my age.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, well, let's talk about your backstory a bit. I guess the place I want to start with, if you don't mind saying, is how old are you?
I'm 69.
Okay, so you're 69. And did you pick up chess when you were like a very young child, or did you pick it up later in life?
Well, when I was about 7 years old, a boy that lived down the block from me taught me how to play. I think he probably learned from his father, you know, and he knew at least something about strategy and I didn't. So he crushed me, you know, every game he played, and then he moved away a few months later out of town and I never saw him again. So that was how I got introduced to the game at least. And you know, I learned the rules and probably didn't know en passant, but I think I knew probably just about all the other rules.
And that young child was Garry Kasparov, right?
Not Garry Kasparov, but his first name was Gary.
Maybe it was.
Like Garry DeGeorge, I think it was, and I was curious whether he ever went on to play like tournaments or whatever. So I searched the U.S. Website, and he wasn't listed. So apparently, he never did go on to be a serious chess player. So
that's too bad. Okay, so you learn at seven. Your neighbor moves away. When's the next time you play chess? Is it not for like 40 years?
No, I lived in West Ellis, Wisconsin at the time, and they had like at the grade school that was about a block from my house, they had a summer recreational program where kids could just do, and they had tons of activities, you know, anything from tetherball to basketball to beanbags, board games, whatever. But they did have a chess set there, and I can't remember much about the games or who I even played, but I know I did play some chess there. So I did at least continue playing the game.
Okay.
And, then when I got to high school, I mean, back in those days, I don't think there were many high schools that even had like chess clubs, but there were I had like three friends that I played chess with in high school that were, you know, similar strength to me. I think I maybe won slightly more than I lost, but we went back and forth. Now, one of these, I guess I became friends with because of chess, because he had been taught chess by a classmate, and he was a real quick learner, and it didn't take him long, and he was beating the guy that taught him consistently. So he was looking for more of a challenge. He knew that I played chess, so he got in touch with me, and so we started playing chess. A lot of our games were on over the phone.
Oh wow!
And back in those days, they had party lines. So and you may not even be familiar, but you shared your landline with somebody else. So, you know, we'd be playing a game, and then we'd have to get off because somebody else wanted to make a phone call. But you know, we would go. You know, we'd tell our moves over the phone. Back in those days, algebraic notation wasn't in existence yet, so we used the old descriptive notation. And but yeah, so we, you know, and with the same guy, I mean, your teacher hat, you might frown on this, and your chess player hat, you might applaud it. But we had this chemistry class, and we were in the back of the room, and I had this chess set that kind of, well, it's a plastic thing, it folded over, it had these little magnetic circles that we would play. So we would pass this set back and forth. We never got caught, you know, I guess I didn't really pay much attention to the class, and I really wasn't very well at doing the reading assignments either in that class. So that was my worst class in high school. I think the quarterly grades, I had three C's and a D. And what was one funny thing about that class, though, is one time we had a test on balancing equations of the chemistry equations. And that's got a lot of like pattern recognition. You know, I was good in math, I had a logical brain, so that sort of thing, I didn't have to have a lot of knowledge to do. I just had to know the basic idea. So we had this test, and the chemistry teacher had this practice where he would pass out tests, and you go around the room, but the highest person's exam you'd pass out first, and you'd go down in that order. Usually I would be probably in the bottom half somewhere, but that particular test, I was the top one. I had like 49 out of 50, and he looked at it three times before he handed it to me, and he said, good job, Dave. You know, he probably thought I was a dunce, but it really, I just, well, you know, it wasn't dunce. I just had lazy study habits in that class. And then the same guy, you know, when I was out of, about a year out of high school, I was working at a fast food restaurant. He came in to eat, and he said, I went to, there's a shopping mall, Mayfair Mall in the Milwaukee area. And he said, I went to this Mayfair Mall day, and I played this guy who was playing a bunch of guys in chess. Mm. And he says, and he's going to be there again tomorrow. You want to go with me? And I hadn't played chess in probably a year or whatever, but I said, sure, what the heck, it'd be fun. So I go there, and the guy doing the simul, he was playing like 25 boards, was an international master, William Martz.
Okay.
Probably one of the top 10 Wisconsin players still today of all time, I would think, maybe even top five. You know, we've had some grandmasters from Wisconsin, but not many, I don't think. So,
yeah.
But anyway, I played this guy, and somehow I was able to win. And I, you know, I mean, I took notation, but I've lost it. I'd love to have it so I could go back and look at it now. But yeah, about all I remember about the game is I took a pawn on his king side that I thought was a free pawn, and he trapped it within, you know, 2-3 moves, you know, so I got two pawns in exchange for the bishop, but in the process it had opened up his king side. And I was able to take advantage of that and get an attack on his king and win the game. Now, there were some guys that were kind of just walking around the back, and they saw the game was interesting, and they're, you know, standing behind me with a conversation about my game. So I don't know if I might have benefited from their comments. I don't know how much my moves were influenced by that, but at any rate, I do have a claim to fame having beat an international master. So whatever that's worth.
Yeah, that's amazing. What do you feel like your skill level was like back then, if you had to put a number on it?
Oh geez, I mean, I don't, probably 1,000, really. I mean, again, you know, so, but I didn't do anything rated, so I don't really know. I mean, I didn't ever have any instruction or anything like that. But I mean, I had, you know, I mean, I had basic concepts, controlling the center, that sort of thing I knew to do. So, I mean, it's hard to say. But I pretty much after that, essentially didn't play for 30 years.
About that period, you say you knew a bunch of some stuff like take the center and things like that. How did you come across that knowledge? Is that just something you kind of gathered from your own games and figured it out? Or did you have some sort of resources you were using?
I might have looked at a book somewhere along the way on chess strategy. I probably did. I didn't do any kind of extensive studying or research, you know, when I was young.
Yeah. So then you took some time off. Is that what happened?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, went to college, had a job, had a family. It just, you know, my life was consumed with other things.
Yeah.
And I did teach my sons how to play the game, you know, and my youngest son, you know, had an interest for a while, and he was going to these, some rated beginner tournaments. And there was a local 2-year college where they had a little club, and they were running these tournaments. So I was taking him to those local tournaments. I'd drop him off and pick him up. And then this professor actually moved to the Madison area, which from where I was living at that time was like, you know, maybe a 45-minute drive to the tournament. So I thought, well, rather than just drop him off and pick him up, maybe I should just sign up and do the tournament too.
That's fun.
So that's how I got into it. And I mean, I enjoyed it. And then I started playing some other tournaments and just gradually improved. But it was never, even then, it was never my top priority. I mean, so 2006 is when I started playing chess. And then in 2009, I decided to run a marathon, thought it might be a good thing to just do while I still could. And then I kind of got hooked on that, you know, and that takes a lot of training and everything else. So there was always something else that was of higher priority than chess. You know, and I'm thinking right now it's probably a higher priority in my life than it has ever been. I don't have a job anymore. I'm not running quite at the volume I was, you know, so I got I'm doing a little more chess.
Yeah, it looks like from you know, just looking at like your tournaments played, it looks like you played quite a bit and gained a lot of rating pretty fast. I mean, you went from what, like 900 to 15-30 in a 2-year stretch. Do you remember at all like what you were doing back then that allowed you to make such quick progress?
Well, part of it was just getting some experience, getting games under my belt. And we did have sort of a club in the Janesville area that would meet on Saturday afternoons. It, you know, it didn't have dues. It didn't have tournaments. It was just casual meetups.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy that organized it, he used a little slime with the library to get it going. And apparently Janesville did have a fairly strong presence, you know, many years before that, and he wanted to get it going again.
Okay.
And this guy was, he had been the state champion 1 year.
Wow.
And early 1990s, he played in a tournament, and the next day at work, he collapsed from a cardiac event. And he decided to stop playing tournaments. He attributed that event to this just the after effects of the stress of playing in a tournament setting. So he stopped doing tournaments then, but he still loves to play the game on a casual basis. He just doesn't do serious. So I did have the benefit of, you know, playing against him all, you know, often on Saturday afternoon. So you play somebody stronger and you pick things up just from the way they play. So that probably was part of it as well.
Okay. So playing tournaments, playing someone stronger, really thinking about those games. Are you playing online at all? Is this even an option back then?
Back then? No, I don't think, I didn't do any online. I mean, like chess.com and Lee Chess, I don't even think were around then.
Yeah.
I've heard people talk about something called ICC, but I never did that either. So I wasn't doing any online. It was just over the board. I would do, and even the Saturdays, I would tend to do it during the winter months, but during the summer months, I prefer to do other outdoor activities. So I just was just even part of the year, but it still helped, I think, to do that.
Were you doing like tactics books and studying your end games or any of that? Or was it just having some fun playing chess?
No, I mean, when I first started doing tournament chess, I figured, well, I should come up with. like opening line that I get familiar with. So I think I did have a book on the Queen's Gambit and another book on the Sicilian and kind of played those sorts of openings when I could. But I never did. I mean, I didn't do a lot of other types of books. I mean, these days I do a fair amount of YouTube videos and things, but back then I didn't do much of the learning stuff.
Okay. So it's basically just get better by playing someone better than you. I mean, it's a good way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think I probably have nowhere near a prodigy, but I think at least I have like an above average aptitude towards chess. I'd put it that way.
Yeah. So it looks like you played pretty or at least somewhat regularly through about 2012. Does that sound accurate to you?
Yes.
Okay. And your rating jumps all the way up to, 1635 or so. And then we get even higher in 2014. But it looks like, from 2016-17, you're not playing. You only played one tournament in 2018. Are these periods where just like running and other things in your life really just kind of push chess, not just to be a secondary hobby, but something that's just not in the picture anymore?
Yeah, and I can give you an answer. I don't want you to feel bad for asking this question because it doesn't really open up a wound, but I lost a daughter in 2015.
Oh no.
And it just kind of zaps your emotional energy. I just couldn't find the enthusiasm to play tournament chess for about 3 years. It took me before I got back to a tournament after that. And then I think I played one other tournament 2020 just before the pandemic, and then of course over the board stopped. So
yeah, okay.
But that, yeah, that hard. It's like I'd say a parent that's lost a child is always willing to talk about their child. It's like that person is always in their memory, and it's, you know, people are afraid to bring it up because they think they're opening up a wound, but that truly is not the case. So
yeah, well, it's good that you have the fond memories. I imagine, like, in addition to grief and all those elements, trying to play a chess game or like a really like long time control game, I know I have other thoughts that come in about things that are not all that important. I imagine something like that would be really hard to sit down and concentrate for 3 or 4 hours without, you know, thoughts coming in that would make it challenging to play.
Yeah, certainly. Well, the grief is relatively fresh. I mean, your coping skills do improve over time. You know, I mean, I don't feel like it affects my chess play at this stage of my life, but and I do enjoy the game again, you know, and look forward to playing. So I held that rating in the 1600s for about a decade, but there weren't a lot of games played during that decade either. So,
okay. What brought you back in 2020?
Well, I played one tournament in 2018, okay, and I did really well. And then 2020, I just played another tournament, and it was actually, you know, in March of 2020.
Oh, wow.
When early March. The pandemic was already in existence, but it really was hardly, there was hardly any presence in the US. So yeah, it was like around St. Patrick's Day when everything broke loose and everything shut down. So that tournament got squeezed in just before, all the lockdowns and everything else that happened with the pandemic. So, and I didn't do too well on that one either. I mean, that one had our time control. I seem to do a lot better in 90 minute. The time controls are longer. The 60 minute games, even though a lot of times in the longer time control games, I might not even use more than 60 minutes for the whole game. I think it's more a psychological thing. You're afraid to take time to calculate because you know you have a shorter clock, and in the longer games, when you feel like you need to, you can do it because you got plenty of time. So I just do better with the longer time controls. And that one was a short one. So,
okay. Yeah, I can understand that. And that, that like late February, early March 2020 is such a wild time, right? Like, where we can like look around the world and see this terrible pandemic that's coming, and to watch some people be like, it won't hit the US, and other people being like, what? Of course it will. You know, it was just quite the time.
Yeah, it was quite the time. And then, and then after that, I didn't play a tournament until like December of 2022.
Yeah, what did you do in the meantime there? Was it chess free, or were you on all the chess servers and playing online and watching videos? How did that work?
I don't think I did much chess. Probably before I played in December of 2022, I think I would have probably gone online just to kind of get, you know, back in the swing of things a little bit before I played over the board. So, okay. uh, but there wasn't a lot of activity in between. But I did, and you know, I mean, I guess Over the Board was happening before that, but like in 2021, if anything was happening, it was like wearing masks and such. And I just enjoy Over the Board a lot more because it's kind of like a social experience as well. And the social interaction when both players are wearing masks just doesn't seem to be quite as good as, you know, when you're not. So I think I just waited until things were to the point where you didn't need to wear masks anymore. And then I got back into playing fairly regular since then.
Okay, but I think it's kind of interesting.
Not with good results. But
yeah, we're going to get into that in a minute. I think it's very interesting that for a lot of people, the pandemic was like their chance to bunker down and just play chess like 12 hours a day and, you know, really accentuate their chess skills. And they come out of the pandemic and everyone's underrated. And you're like, chess, I've barely touched that thing in 2 years.
Yeah.
So yeah. Do you think that kind of contributed to the challenges that your rating faced over the next 2 years?
I don't think the time off affected it that much, but a lot of it, I think, is just other players.
Yeah.
That did do that during the pandemic improved so much. You know, like I played two tournaments in December of 2022, and the second one it was a state championship. I was in the reserve section under 1800, mm-hmm. and my second round opponent had a rating of 954, I believe. Uh-oh. It was.
Were they a kid?
Well, not a kid. I'd say a young adult in 20s. Okay. You know. And he won every game he played in the reserve section, including a couple players in the, you know, 1700s.
Wow.
So his playing strength, you know, obviously was at least class A level, you know, I mean, and he had a 954 rating. So, you know, my rating took a big hit from losing to a lower rated player, because even at the end of the tournament with the algorithms, his ending rating was still in the 1300s, you know, even though he was much stronger player than that.
Yeah.
So I'd say my decline during that period was partly due to playing underrated players and just partly due to maybe poor performance, probably a combination of the two.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's so fascinating how, you know, ratings have such a hard time catching up to people who are so wildly underrated, right? Because you would think like, wow, 900 to 1300, that's a 400-point gain. That's great. But if the person's actually rated like 1700, they have to pull a ton more points from someone else before they actually get up to that rating. So it's kind of maddening.
Next tournament, he's still going to be way underrated, but at least he's making progress towards it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's we have a continuous pipeline of really strong junior players that are consistently coming through that, you know, are very underrated when they start. And it definitely makes it challenging for the people who have been around for a while and are trying to hold on to their ratings and are not improving at the same rate as the youngsters are.
That is true. And obviously it's always been the case with young kids that they're going to be underrated because they're improving quickly. But yeah. I think with the, you know, like the case of this young adult in their 20s, I mean, that was more a function of the pandemic, you know, where normally a player of that age is probably going to be, you know, close to hitting their rating and their playing strength are going to be pretty similar, where
yeah,
in this case it wasn't, you know.
Yeah, coming out of the pandemic, I felt like ratings were irrelevant. You would sit down across from somebody and you're like, I don't even need to know your rating. Let's just play chess because your rating could mean anything. It does not do anything right now.
Yeah, well, in this very last tournament I played, in the first round, I played an unrated player,
Oh, those are dangerous.
but I was familiar because I used to live in Janesville, and I've got friends in Janesville, and they recently had a Rock County Championship tournament. I knew that this unrated player had won that county tournament, so I knew he was a strong player, and so I wasn't blindsided. I managed to get a draw. He ended up with a provisional rating of, I want to say, 1679 after his first tournament. But I didn't take him lightly, and I approached him as if he was a strong player, and
It is funny how that can be challenging. Do you find that if a player is very low rated, it kind of changes your approach, whether intentionally or unintentionally?
Maybe years back I might have approached it differently, but these days, like you say, you take ratings with a grain of salt. You don't know what somebody's playing strength is. Especially with anybody that's young or relatively young, I mean, if I'm playing somebody my age, I mean, I would take their rating to be, indicative of their playing strength, and that I'm not playing somebody who's way underrated. But for younger players, I guess I assume that they're stronger than what their rating is almost.
Yeah. Okay, so I got to ask about this. It looks like you come back over the next 2 years, you lose about a 200 rating points, you go down to your floor. How are you feeling at this point? Are you thinking like, what is happening here? What am I doing? Is it time to hang up chess? Like, what are you feeling?
Well, I mean, obviously, using your expression, I did hit the pits of despair,
Oh yeah.
and the very last tournament before I hit my floor of 1400, I mean, I was rated, I was like 1406 or something, and that was a 1 hour time control tournament. But I approached that one thinking, okay, I can only lose 6 points of rating because I'm almost down to the floor. So, what? It's not going to hurt me to play it. So I, anyway, I hit that, and then I mean, I still felt like I was stronger than my rating, even though I hadn't proved it. And at some point, you're going to have to say, well, the numbers don't lie. But I still felt like I was better than that. So I mean, I still had a goal to improve from there. I guess I had a stretch goal to return to a Class B rating someday. But I thought that would be, might take years if I ever got there. So now I'm just 9 points away after two tournaments. So I've made great strides, and I do have another tournament last week in December.
Ooh.
Might end up back in the 1500s, who knows? But I'm hoping that I can do well enough to maybe get to back in the 1600s.
Yeah. So let's talk about these last turn tournaments. So after losing a lot of rating in one tournament in November, you went from 1400 to 1534. Did you do something different for that tournament? Did you like work on something specific ahead of time? Did you have a different mindset? Anything different there?
Well, it was first of all, it was the long time control. It 90 minutes with the 30-second increments. So that's almost equivalent to like 2 hours by the time you had those increments in.
Yeah.
So that was going for me. Now, the other thing is this tournament was held concurrently with a Scholastic tournament. So the Scholastic tournament was through grade 12. And then this tournament that they refer to as the Veterans Tournament is only for 18 and older.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
If you're 18 and you're a senior in high school, you could pick which one you wanted to play in, but pretty much it was exclusive. You had to play in one or the other. So for one thing, it did eliminate the underrated players under 18 of age from the pool. And I would say the average age of the players in that particular tournament was probably around 50, you know, so it was an older group. Even though the win that I did have was probably against the guy who was 30-ish. And I guess I should talk a little bit about that win, because that one turned out to be more knowledge than skill, because
interesting.
It was a Nimzo Indian, and I had seen a video against this line of the Nimzo Indian where the white player plays E3. You end up putting your knight on e4, it's protected by the pawn on f5, and then you do a rook lift and you get to rook over to g6. And I had seen this idea in this video, and I thought, well, I'm never going to get this position on a board in a game that I play, but it was interesting.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it was sitting right there. I mean, this position, you've got your bishop on the diagonal, you got the bishop on b7.
Okay.
And you basically move that knight that's on e5 to on e4 rather, to d2. And you're basically won. You've basically won the game because you sacrifice this knight.
Oh, okay.
And it clears that diagonal that the bishop's on.
Yeah.
So you're threatening to take that knight with your knight, but he took it with the queen,
mm-hmm.
and you sacrifice your rook on g2.
Yep.
And
goes in the king,
and then you bring the queen, and then the king recaptures that rook on g2. Now the knight is pinned by the bishop on b7, mm-hmm. and the queen comes out to g5, and the knight can't take it because it's pinned, and the king's got nowhere to escape. And it's like, I mean, I'm not strong enough that I would have calculated that over the board, but I had seen the idea in the video, and it worked like a charm, you know. And so that one was luck, I guess, a little bit of luck on that one.
Yeah, it is that interesting thing in chess. We often hear people say there's no luck in chess, you know, because all the knowledge is there. But there's definitely that luck in, like, does somebody walk into just some cool opening idea you know, or do they play some opening idea you've never seen before, and you're just like, I don't even know how to handle this. So that's
because this guy was, I mean, he was attacking on the queen's side, pushing pawns.
Yeah.
And I could see what he was trying to do, but I could also see that what he was doing was too slow for the attack that I was pulling. In fact, he didn't even castle until I moved the rook to g3.
Oh, because you threatened the pawn, and that's how he protected it?
Pawn. So he castled basically to protect pawn, which was a natural reaction. But he had other moves he could have played where he might have just been down, say, a half a pawn or something, you know.
Right.
But he castled into a loss, basically. In that particular position, castling was the wrong thing to do.
And he probably thought, I'm doing fine. And you're like, no, I've already seen this idea. I'm going here, and then I'm going here. I'm sacking this rook.
Yeah, and he's like 1660 rated, and he's probably looking like, here, I've got this old guy playing at his floor at 1400. He may have underestimated me as well. So, yeah. It was a beautiful make. But again, it was, you know, more attributed to the fact that I'd seen a video and not so much that I had this great calculation skill.
Okay. So one thing you did before this tournament, it sounds like, is watch some videos in your opening.
Yeah. And I have been, you know, I've been doing, you know, more of that sort of thing since I retired, you know. So, I mean, again, I've been spending more time on chess this year than I ever had been able to before. So I am gaining knowledge, you know, more knowledge just by watching these and learning some openings better and things like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, any other videos you're watching? Like, are you watching stuff on endgames? Are you watching like speed runs in your openings? Like, what kind of videos are you finding helpful?
Yeah, here and there I might watch something like an endgame video openings. I mean, I think, I've probably changed my repertoire a little bit, even at this. I mean, I've been playing the night off for a long time, but.
Ooh, daring.
One thing is, you know, it used to be when I started playing chess, you know, 18 years ago, it seems like most of the time you play the Sicilian and the white player would play the move sequence for the knight off. It just seemed that was normal, you know, although it seems quite often you blitz out the first five moves and they stop and think before they play move six. And like, if I was a e4 player, I think I would have at least a favorite way to play against the knight off, and I'd have move six, because there's I looked at one time and there's like a dozen moves that they can play for move six and still maintain an advantage. And I think, do I really want to keep playing this? I mean, it's like they can specialize in one, and I have to learn all 12 and be prepared. You know, even weird move like rook to g1 is a move.
Yep.
You know, I mean, obviously they're not going to castle kingside, so you probably start pushing your pawns on the queen side, knowing that. But it's like I think I've actually switched to, you know, like an accelerated dragon or even hyper accelerated, one of the two. I think I've been, you know, watching some videos on that, and I feel like I already can play that better than I can play the knight off, even though I haven't played it yet.
Interesting. Did you also run into what I was running into, which is like no one even plays into the knight off anyway? They just play the Alpin or another variation of the close Sicilian.
Or they would play, you know, second move they might play knight c3 instead of knight f3. And because I knew the knight off, or knew it fairly well, I would always try to force it to transpose back into it, you know, and that's probably not a good idea either, you know. So And I'd say in recent years, it's like seems like the minority of players actually play the Nidor sequence. So it's like it's not even worth trying.
I'm in full agreement. It's like the Nidor is really hard, like you said, because there's so many different variations. And then most people aren't playing into it anyway. So it's like, why am I spending all my time learning this very complicated opening when I don't even get to play it anyway? And that's why I switched away from the Nidorf. I loved the Nidorf when, like back in 2001, when it was like they either played Bishop G5, Bishop E3, or Bishop C4. That was it. Those were the only three legit responses to the Nidorf that I was aware of.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I mean, yeah, Bishop C4 or Bishop G5, I would push the e-pawn one square, and anything else, pretty much, I would push it two squares. You know, I mean, it was a lot easier to play.
Yeah, opening theory was a lot different back then. If someone played Rook G1, everyone in the tournament hall would have been like, what? You can't do that. What are you even doing?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, and of course, with computers these days, too, people can analyze these novelties. And if you can't play it the same way you play against the other ways. And if you can't figure it out before, you lose.
Right. And we've all read the same three Nidorf books by Daniel King and John Nunn. And so, you know, those are the moves.
That's it. Yeah, that's exactly it. So, and this last tournament, I played, played Sicilian, and then he played the Elephant. So, I mean, but, I've seen that enough times before. But, it's not like that one's that big of a challenge, but it's just different.
That's cool. So it sounds like you did some work on your openings, you watch some videos going this tournament, and then bam, you do amazingly well and gain 134 points. Were you thinking like, okay, this is a one-off, or were you like, yes, this is it, we're back?
The tournament I gained 134 points, I only won one game, I lost one game, and I had three draws, but I mean, the three draws, I think the average rating of those three players was like, 450 maybe above mine. So just playing against much stronger players three times, contributed that rating rise as well.
Gotcha.
And I say all of those draws, I didn't play the opening that well. I mean, I wasn't losing, but I was, maybe down a half a pawn or whatever. And at some point, when you feel like a game is starting to slip away from you, I just focused and on the engines, pretty much made all the best engine moves to get back into an equalized position and drew in those games. I guess sometimes when you have your back against the wall, it maybe forces you to really, buckle down, I guess. But that seemed to be the theme of the first tournament anyways, where I just was able to get draws out of positions where I was originally worse.
Mm-hmm. Do you prefer playing higher rated players so the pressure is kind of off and then like a draw is actually a good result?
Yeah, I think I actually almost prefer to get paired up now because that doesn't hurt your rating as much. I mean, if you lose to somebody much stronger, it doesn't have much impact in your rating. Where if you lose somebody much lower, it's going to really hurt. I mean, so the two tournaments ago, I was paired up every round because I drew the first round and won the second round, I was always, in the higher pool, so I never got paired down. This last tournament I played, and I was in the top half, so I got paired down the first round, and see what I, yeah, so I drew against the unrated player, then I drew against a young kid, you know, in the 1100s, who was, you know, stronger than that. So now I'm getting pared down all these rounds. And third round I did win, but on the second day, rounds four and five is when I, round four, I had the best, I beat it. I had a win against a 1966 player.
That's amazing.
About the age, you know, but the strongest player I've ever beaten. And then in the final round, I played a player rated 1822, and I drew against him. And he played very accurately. I mean, interesting. He played the same opening, Nimzo Indian, where of that game where I did two sacks and won, except he played it accurately. Because in that particular opening, there is a point where, you know, after White's Castle, they play their rook back, or their knight, rather, they play their knight back to e1, which defends the g2 square and also allows them to push f3, which is that is the absolute best move to play, even though it's kind of counterintuitive to play your knight backwards like that. So he knew, you know, he'd probably been playing that line a long time, and he knew exactly how to play it. And, you know, and then he ended up with a draw with that game. But, you know, he's better when they play the moves the way he did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those backwards knight moves can be incredibly hard to do. So it seems like you've had such an amazing run here, going from 1400 to 1591 in two tournaments. I don't know. How did that feel? How does it feel getting all of that rating in such a short amount of time? Does it feel like sort of this is where I should have been this whole time? I've been underrated. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm getting back to where I should have been all along. I never approach things with a ton of confidence. It's not like I go into this tournament at the end of December thinking I'm going to crush everybody. You always realize that, you can go back and that you've had played a lot of bad tournaments too, but at least I feel like, you know, you got the potential. And, I've won against, several games over the years against Class A tournaments, but a lot of times, you know, like you might be playing somebody playing at 1800 and it's their floor, and their playing strength is probably lower than that. And, you know, the guy did beat in this tournament. He's, you know, 1966. He wasn't playing at a floor. He's been playing a lot of tournaments in recent years. So presumably his playing strength and his rating were pretty similar. So you do get some confidence from having beaten a player of that strength. It's just a game where I came up with the right plan, I guess. My execution was far from perfect, but it was enough to maintain a winning advantage. It Queen's Indian, and it worked for me. So I was actually in that one, white with Queen Indian.
Big wins feel great. Yep. That's for sure. I'm curious. I don't see this on your tournament record at all, but have you played in any senior tournaments, and are you looking into it at all?
I might. Yeah, I have a friend from Janesville who did really well in the tournament February, or was it the last year? Hmm. Yeah, I think in that one as well. I think when I looked at the results of that tournament he played, and I think I saw you were in that tournament too. Chicago? Was there a
season? Yeah. Yeah, the one over the summer.
Which isn't that, or maybe it was summer, I guess.
It's the senior open.
But he played in it, and he did, I mean, he beat, you know, his rating was, you know, going in was like in the 1700s, and he beat some guys above 2000. So, I mean, again, but again, it's the thing, I think, playing against people at least of similar age, it makes a big difference. Now, I mean, I've got a tournament idea that would, I mean, I don't know if it would ever, if anybody would ever do it, but I mean, just from my running background in running, you know, they have age brackets, you know, so there's always bracket, you know, wars within age brackets. And like for Boston Marathon, for example, the older you are, the easier qualifying standard is.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would, you know, if you had a tournament where instead of having classes, you would have age brackets,
mm-hmm.
you know, so all players in the 70s would play each other in 60s and 50s, for example. And sometimes it might not be practical if you only got two players in the 70s playing, or then you could merge them with the 60s or whatever. But I think it would be a really interesting idea to actually have pools of players of similar age,
mm-hmm.
and do it that way, because they do have tournaments where you play people in your own class.
Yeah.
But none where you play people of your same age. And I mean, that would have a lot of appeal to me, but I've not heard of it, and it probably won't ever happen, but that would be a great idea if it ever took place.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I've seen tournaments that do a lot of prizes based on age pools. Like the Senior Open did that, where it was like every 5 to 10 year brackets, they had prizes, but they didn't pair people based on those ages, which I agree would be really an interesting idea to be paired against people of your similar age. Well, what are your goals now? It seems like you said your goal was to reach 1600 again, and you are right on the cusp of that. Do you have any other goals, or is it basically just, I'm going to hit 1600 and then I'll make some new goals?
I mean, obviously you try to keep improving, you know, but if I could at least get to 1600s and hold it, I mean, I'd be satisfied with that. I'm always going to try to improve and do better, but at some point, you know, your rating rises, your playing strength, and you kind of stay there. I mean, you know, at some point the age is going to, you know, have an impact. You know, I mean, I see, you know, you see lots of players in tournaments that, you know, once, you know, they hit, you know, say around my age or whatever, they're, you know, play, you know, 200 points or whatever above their, you know, their peak of their career, and their playing strength is, you know, clearly not what it once was, you know. So, you know, I guess you lose brain cells or whatever, but you just don't, you know, you just can't calculate as well or whatever as you age. So I'm gonna, you know, I'm trying to defy that as best I can. I mean, I won't be able to do it forever, but I'd like to try to maintain strong play as long as I can. I mean, at some point, if it gets to the point where I don't feel like I can play competitive tournaments anymore, then I'll just go to senior centers and have fun and enjoy the game, and
nice.
And that would be it.
Yeah, I think that's such a healthy approach. Just play tournaments as long as you feel like you can make the progress you want, and then when you can't, no problem. You've got lots of fun avenues to play chess.
Yeah, and just enjoy the beauty of the game. You know, I mean, I've even enjoyed watching some of the broadcasts of the, you know, World Championship. You know, the live commentary and such. Which I guess in your time zone would even be harder. I mean, what time? It would have had to been like 1 a.m. when they started.
I'll just say this. When I got up, the games were over. We'll say that.
You know, I mean, I sometimes I'd wake up in the morning, in the middle of the night, to use the restroom or whatever, and it's like 3 a.m. I thought, well, the game's going. Might as just turn it on and watch it for a while. But,
okay. That's cool. But, okay. Well, it sounds like you've got this amazing run here. I'm just so impressed and happy for you. I could definitely imagine, you know, the 2 year stretch of falling to your floor and thinking like, okay, well, I feel like I'm underrated, right? I feel like my playing strength is higher, but the results aren't coming. And so it's so fun to see someone who gets to just break out of that pit of despair with such a fervor. So congratulations. It looks like a lot of fun.
And one thing I do with the videos I do watch is sometimes I'll watch them more than once because feel like I just don't. I mean, you watch it and you think, oh, everything you think you're going to remember it, but you get the lines mixed up or whatever. You don't. I mean, in order to really, especially I think for an older person to really retain it and absorb it well, I think you almost have to watch it more than once.
Yeah, I agree. Are you taking notes at all, or just kind of taking the mental notes?
More mental notes. But I do, you know, think that, you know, for me, at least the videos do help quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, Dave, thanks so much for coming by. I really enjoyed the conversation. I think others will as well. It's fun to hear someone at 69 making massive improvements. I know this is a fear I have. I'm in my early 50s and it's kind of like, have I reached it? Have I reached the end? When is my brain going to stop letting me improve? And you're proving the answer is not for a long time. And that's very exciting to me.
Because you'll talk about a senior tournament and you're 50 and I'm 69. It's like we still be playing the same tournament, right?
No. Dude, people gave me some funny looks at that senior tournament. I'm going to tell you, I walked in and they're like, what? How are you here? I was like, I'm 50. Yeah, oh, that was very funny. I don't think everyone was happy to see me.
That's where the cutoff is, right? I mean, that's where it is. But but even so, I'd still rather play somebody 50 than somebody 20. So, you know.
How can people get a hold of you if they want to, you know, follow up with you, hear more about your story?
I'm trying to think what the best way to be. I pretty much for the most part just use the Twitter account for following others. I don't really do much myself on it.
Okay. Message you there.
Yeah, they could probably message me there. I mean, I do have an email, but if somebody really had a reason wanted to contact me, then I'm sure they could. It's just basically my name at yahoo.com. So it's just Dave Landcour at yahoo.com.
Okay. Excellent. So
you could always reach me that way as well, but I don't have any platforms or anything that I'm real active on.
You haven't started a YouTube channel like 200 points at 69. That sounds like an awesome channel to start.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. No, I mean, I haven't done anything like that, but I figured I was probably a little, you know, a little bit different angle than a lot of your other guests, being older and maybe the way I got started and things like that. Maybe a slightly different angle than a lot of the other ones. You might hear some repetition of stories and so I thought, you know, I saw your post on Twitter that you were looking for somebody as a guest, and I thought, well, I've had decent improvement lately. Maybe I could add something, you know.
Yeah, I'm really happy you reached out. Thank you so much. Well, everyone out there, I hope this is the stretch where you gain 200 points in 2 months, or you win your club championship, or something else amazing happens. But if it's not, Don't worry, that's okay. It's the norm to plateau and maybe even to pit of despair. So come back next week. We'll have another guest for you. Have some more inspiration, and I'll see you next time, everybody. Goodbye.